We are getting survival smarts and sharing a laugh here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for being here. Danger lurks around every corner. We're getting a survival plan for those harrowing situations with the help of the creators of the Worst Case Scenario Handbook series. We'll work through a bunch of modern threats. You, dropping your cell into the toilet. Yucko! What's the key survival skill everyone should know? At what age did you master it? Have you needed to use it in your life? Have you ever found yourself in a survival situation? What was it like? How did you keep your wits about you and escape the threat? We're at 800-642-1234. David Borgenicht is creator and co-author of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook series. The latest edition addresses more than 70 threats and is called Expert Advice for Extreme Situations. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So at this dire moment in a pandemic, how do you feel about survival skills?
Well, I mean, survival, we wrote the first book about 20-some years ago when Y2K was
about,
yeah, remember that? That little chestnut?
That little thing, yeah.
Yeah, thankfully that didn't turn anything into anything, but survival was in the air and people were freaking out and we were a couple of them. And we talked to a lot of experts for the entire book, but in general, the principles of survival remain the same in any situation. So, for this pandemic, it's really all about managing your fear and not panicking as a first step. Because, I mean, I don't know, speaking for myself, I've had plenty of moments of fear and panic throughout all this. And it's just kind of a daily challenge sometimes to manage that fear and not panic and you know, just go way up into your head and make rash decisions. And so, you know, that's the most important thing you can do in any situation is just really try to remain calm and then make a plan.
Yeah. Why is having a plan so important?
Well, I mean, I think it kind of goes without saying, at least it leaves you in a bit more of the control. You're not just waiting for the circumstances to take their effect on you. It's really, it's almost about imagining the worst and then, you know, imagining that the worst thing has happened. And then what are you going to do? What actions are you going to take to keep yourself safe, keep your family safe, keep your limbs intact, whatever the moment is. Having a plan is part of what keeps you calm and non-reactive to whatever it is that's happening around you.
You put a lot of stock in willpower and this quality within, your will within. What is so key about willpower?
I think it's really, I mean, if by willpower, I think, you know, I think you mean the will to survive. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I would say. I think, you know, obviously willpower, people think of it in terms of, you know, not making bad choices, not really, again, reacting negatively to negative emotions. But that is just so key in any stress situation, that the fight or flight mode really does put you in like survival mode, whatever that stressor is, your body's going into that fight or flight or flee mode. And so being able to recognize that and manage that and yet still obviously maintain your will to make it through is really the most important thing. And again, not being reactive to the stress, emotions, and chemicals that are running through your body in any anxious or fearful situation.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with author David Borgenicht, who's creator of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook series, and we're discussing how to survive the unexpected here in this Wisconsin weekend. Have you read any books in the Worst Case Scenario series? What were some of your takeaways? What did you like the best? What questions do you have about certain situations you've read about? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. David, there's this line in your book that says, be grateful to just be awake and alive. What role does gratitude, what does gratitude have to do with survival?
Again, I think that's one of the antidotes to fear. FDR was right. The thing that we have to fear most is fear itself. And taking, being able to step back from that fear, be grateful, find even a sense of humor in a situation. Any positive emotion like that can really almost negate the effect of fear in your body at a given moment. And just, you know, the power of remembering, you know what? I'm alive. I'm okay. I'm safe. And I have choices is often powerful enough to just get you through it. And part of that is being grateful for what you have, and not fearful of what you don't, or, afraid of what you may not have. Just be grateful for the fact that you're still awake and alive, and you're able to, you know, make choices that hopefully will improve your situation, whatever it may be.
One of the situations that you put forth, the threats, about 71 threats in your new book, survive viral outbreak, something that we can all understand right now.
Is that happening?
No. What? What? Can you walk us through this threat? Not that we wouldn't know about it, but how should we be approaching surviving viral outbreak?
Well, I mean, we wrote this before, a long time before this pandemic. So it's good to know that basically the advice that we have given was in line with the advice we've been getting throughout, which is just.
You could test your words.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first we said get the vaccine if available. So that's if you're not infected. But of course, it's not available yet. But once it is available, that's going to be key in terms of controlling this. Avoiding human contact obviously is important. Staying inside, not touching anything in particular. We tend to touch at least 30 objects every minute, and including our face and nose. And so being mindful of that, wearing gloves, wearing a face mask, washing our hands regularly. And all the things that we've learned over the course of the year are true, and are the best way to control it from at least an individual standpoint. I mean, we can't control what other people do, but we can control how we interact and whether we take the science and the messaging seriously and the public health warnings seriously. And that is, you know, way more important than a little discomfort in wearing a mask in a situation that you otherwise might be exposed. So we really need to adhere to that, especially as there's hope on the horizon with a vaccine, or at least several vaccines that are nearing readiness.
Yeah. And what objects do you see us needing to regularly clean? Because you mentioned that as well.
Well, all your high touch objects in your house, doorknobs, light switches, faucets in particular, railings, handles to refrigerators, things like that. Anything else that you or somebody else in the house or somebody who just came in to clean might have been touching is just good to take care of.
David Borgenicht, co-author of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook series, which first came to save the day for us more than 20 years ago in publication. What's the worst case scenario that you're most fearful of? What do you want to know about what it takes to survive the situation? What questions about survival would you like to ask David? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more survival plans. We're getting uber prepared here in Wisconsin Weekend on the Ideas Network. We are getting expert advice for extreme situation when life throws us an extreme curveball. It is the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author David Borgenecht writes, "Remember that willpower is the most crucial survival skill of all. Are you cool under fire? Nerves of steel? Has your fast reaction saved you or someone you love? What survival tactics can you share? Be part of this 800-642-1234. The latest in the series is expert advice for extreme situations, covering about 70 scenarios, and David stays with us for the hour. Well, let's look at some animals here. first, starting with bears, because, you know, bears are here in Wisconsin, especially up in the North Woods. What should we do if we face a bear?
Well, the first thing you want to do is stand your ground and stand tall. Don't look threatening, but keep your eyes on the bear and speak softly to demonstrate that you're not a threat. You know, again, trying to control that fear response in your body is going to be important. If the bear charges, it may bluff charge initially, just kind of run at you and then stop and back away. It's pretty common for bears to do that. And so if they charge, be ready to defend yourself, but don't assume the bear will actually attack. And if it does, you actually want to, again, try to strike back with anything you can. Go for its sensitive eyes or the nose. You're not going to be able to do anything with its body, but if you can try to strike back at the eyes, it's going to be more effective. But again, the more important thing is when you see a bear is to stand your ground and make your presence known. You want to make sure that you keep your children close at hand if you're hiking with your children. And if you see a bear in your car, please remember to remain in your car. Don't get out even for a quick photo. Keep your windows up and just watch the bear from the safety of your car.
Yeah. Have you had to put those skills into action?
Well, I grew up in Utah and did a lot of camping and hiking in the West when I was a kid. Certainly have seen bears and applied that. We've never been attacked, thankfully.
Yeah.
Heard them and seen them, but you know, doing everything you can to avoid an attack in the first place is obviously important if you're going to be in bear country. So if you're camping, you want to make sure you pack your food away and you eliminate food odors from yourself. And again, just stand your ground and don't run. Because they can definitely outrun you and they can climb better than you. So just, again, stand your ground and remain calm. And, you know, they're most likely to leave you alone unless they feel threatened. So don't look threatening.
So if you're speaking quietly to this bear in front of you, what are you telling it?
That's a really good question. I have no picnic basket, maybe. That's a very Yogi Bear reference for the millennials out there that they probably won't know. you're just saying anything you can to remain calm and keep yourself calm, most of all. There's no script. It's really up to you in the situation.
We are spending Wisconsin Weekend with the creator of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook series, David Borgenecht. In these uncertain times, we're discussing how to survive the unexpected, and you can join in. Have you ever been attacked by a bear, or maybe had to approach a bear? Maybe you've been in a flash flood. How did you escape? What advice can you share? Have you been in a car accident? What happened, and what injuries did you sustain? What did you learn about your reflexes? 800-642-1234. Well, let's, David, move on to rattlesnakes. What should we do if we encounter a snake?
Well, snakes are sort of deceptive because, again, they're especially rattlesnakes, they're going to, you know, make a strong sound, and our instinct is going to be to run away from that sound. But remember that they're really only likely to strike if they are fully coiled up. So, and they can strike at approximately pretty much half their length. So, so you want to back away slowly from a snake. And again, just don't try to approach it or prod it. Give it a wide berth. If you're hiking in an area with snakes, obviously you should be doing so with thick boots and pants. But remember that they generally are going to be visible. So most of them are cold-blooded and need the sun. So they're often lying out in the open when you're hiking out, and they're not likely to just sneak attack. You're likely to see them and hear them. So you'll have some time to back away slowly and give it a wide berth.
Well, let's go to John in Sabin, who's had a bear encounter. Hi, John. What did you learn?
Hi. I sold my farm, and the excavator who was digging the hole where the old house was said he won't touch it because there's a mama bear in the basement of this tearing down house, okay? So I was the landlord. I got called up. I went over there. And I snuck up and I crawled up real carefully to that hole. And it was a basement window hole that I was looking at. And I could see nothing but black in there. Well, I had to crawl in a little closer to see anything. Then I saw three pairs of green little eyes looking at me.
Oh.
Well, I had to get the bear out or the excavator wouldn't start building this new house. So I had to get the bear out. So what did I do? I thought I'd throw something at it. I looked around for a brick. I found a half a brick, and I got close enough to throw, and I used to be a baseball pitcher, so I know how to throw. Well, I threw three bricks in there and nothing, not even a peep. And I said, well, Frank, I tried.
Oh, no. Well, did the bears finally leave or what was the resolution?
Yeah, the bear left on its own.
On its own.
When it ended up unhibernating.
Yeah.
It left on its own.
John, thank you for sharing that story. You know, I guess when we're dealing with wildlife, they too have an agenda, David, and we have to respect what they want as well. This is a bit of a negotiation.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's important to remember that they are in their homes more than we are in ours. You know, they're the ones when we're out in nature and we encounter a mountain lion or a bear or any sort of wildlife that are in their territory. So we need to respect their territory, which generally means remaining calm and standing your ground and backing away. Obviously, if you're attacked, you're going to want to and need to defend yourself. But respecting the fact that you're in their home is really the first thing to keep in mind.
What about an encounter with a mountain lion? What would you say there?
Well, we actually have heard from people who used our advice in the first edition of this book and said it was sound. There was a woman who was hiking in California who wrote to us and thanked us for helping her and her daughter in a situation when they encountered a mountain lion while they were hiking. The most important thing to do with a mountain lion is to make yourself appear larger than you are. We suggest often opening your coat wide if you're wearing a coat, or if you're with your child, pick your child up and put your child on your shoulders so you seem taller. And they will often just back away from something larger than they are.
Let's go to Deb in Oconomowoc. Hi, Deb.
Good morning.
Good morning. What can you share?
Well, I had a comment and then I have a question. I read a book about survival techniques, and I don't remember if it was one of these authors' books or not, but one thing I took away from that was often when humans are faced with some very unusual circumstances, our brain takes some time to process it, and we sort of freeze like deer in a headlight, and we don't know what to do, and we don't react very quickly, and that stuck with me. And I was in Milwaukee one day, and I observed someone get hit by a car in the crosswalk. And my first instinct was, and I was surprised at myself, but it was, oh, someone will help that person. I'll just keep going. You know, I don't want to, you know, get involved. I didn't know what to do. And what I had to fight that instinct and say, no, I will help this person. And I was surprised because not very many people did stop to help. They, I think, probably felt the way I did, like, I'll pretend I didn't see that and just keep going.
Oh, that's a very powerful observation, Deb. I want you to just hold on here as we talk about survival skills with author David Borgenicht. He's behind the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook series, first published in 1999. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Deb and David's response, more survival plans, and the psychology around it right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It is expert advice for extreme situations. We're in the mindset to feel prepared for anything on this Wisconsin weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Jump from a moving car, check. Fend off a shark, check. Escape from a sinking car, check. What survival skill do you want a step-by-step instruction on? What survival skill came in handy in your life? Are you a fan of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook series? What's your favorite scenario? Join in 800-642-1234. We're talking with series co-creator David Borgenicht, who is our guide this hour. And Deb, in Oconomowoc, you were telling a story there about how you really had to fight that instinct that you wanted to just keep going when you saw an emergency happen right there before you. What was going on there that you were, what was happening inside of you?
I saw this happen, and at first I sort of couldn't believe I actually had seen someone get hit by a car. And as I said, I was in a car, so my first instinct was to just say, someone else is going to help. I'm not an emergency medical person, so I'll just keep going. I'll pretend I didn't see it. And I remembered this book and it talking about how you have to fight that kind of instinct to not react in an emergency. And so I did pull over and called 911 and stayed with her until emergency personnel arrived. So it was interesting because it wasn't the way that I always thought I would react if I saw an emergency. I always thought, of course, I'll just jump right into action. So I was surprised at my own, reluctance initially to do something.
David, is this common that what Deb was feeling to leave the site or to really try to get herself to become involved?
Well, again, you know, whenever your body goes into its fight or flight mode, you're going to be faced immediately. You're going to feel like you have to fight, flee, or you're going to freeze. Like, those are the three things that your body is telling you to do. And maybe those are the right choice, but in any situation, they may not be. So you're going to have to notice that that's what you're feeling, which is exactly what Deb apparently did. She noticed that she was having a reaction that didn't feel right. And often that's the first step, is just the noticing of what you are feeling. Often noticing where in your body you feel it is really the first step into naming it, and then being able to step back momentarily from that situation and say, all right, what is the right choice? Is it one of these three things my body's telling me to do? Or is it really to stick around and stand my ground and try to help people survive the situation?
Deb, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And that kind of, so I had a question about another situation I was in, where I was in a high-rise hotel in Manhattan with my elderly mother-in-law and two younger children, and a fire alarm went off in the middle of the night. And we were on like the 40th floor. And so initially what I did was call the front desk because I didn't know where are we supposed to evacuate or not evacuate. And they told me, stay in your room. And, of course, this was post 9/11, and I recalled that emergency operators had told people in the towers to stay where they were. And so that I was very nervous, and I kept looking out in the hall and didn't see anything, didn't see any other people. And I always wondered, you know, because I knew it would take me time with an elderly person and two young children to get down 40 flights of stairs. So I kept thinking, should we just go? Should we just get started? Or should we stay like they told us? And I always wondered if I did stay. And eventually the fire alarm went off, but it did take a long time and two or three calls on my part down to the front desk and just being repeatedly told, just stay where you are. So I just wondered if that was the right thing to do.
Oh, Deb, thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like you made the right choice. I mean, obviously you're still here and it went well, but yeah, I mean, you really, there are just so many factors in a situation. If you're alone and you can make that, make it safely down the stairs and you know, you have a sense of where the fire is. It you know, you might want to try to make it down to the ground, but, you know, really there are just so many factors and you really can't predict the right one except for just your ability to remain calm and make the choice that you think is best in any given moment.
And this was a situation where Deb was having to trust the information that was being dispatched to her. And that trust she had to trust the information. So, you know, what about that when we are asking for details, when we're asking for information so that we can personally make an informed decision?
Yeah, well, obviously that's been such a key factor this year, trusting the information that we're getting and making what you believe is the right decision to protect yourself. Again, I think the best thing you can do is really get in touch with your own instincts. You know, if you're getting good information and it sounds trustworthy, if you've called the front desk and they said, no, stay in your room, it's safer there, don't get in the elevator, whatever. You know, you really have to look at who it is that's delivering it and assess your own tolerance of that risk of either following it or not following it, because it's really, really key. But again, trusting your gut instincts and your heart instincts and is going to be more helpful to you than trusting your immediately, you know, lizard brain reactive instincts, which often just tell you to you know, move quickly and protect yourself. So really, really trying to read the situation and taking a moment to do that is always going to be important.
Deb, thanks for sharing your experiences with us. Our guide this hour on surviving the unexpected is David Borgenecht. He's the creator and co-author of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook series. What is a top survival skill that everyone should know? At what age did you learn it? Have you needed to use it in your own life? What do you have in your purse or backpack that can get you out of a situation? Join in with your survivalist tactics and what you've learned, 800-642-1234. Dave, let's turn to some more lighter fare, if you will. Surviving dropping a cell phone into the toilet. How can we salvage that phone?
Yes, I have. I will admit that I've done this a couple of times.
A couple.
and I will say, first of all, I've now made it a rule that I will not use my cell phone in a manner that might allow me to drop it in the toilet. So, you know, sit down, don't stand for the men out there. But you want to try to remove it from the toilet as soon as possible. The longer it submerges, the greater chance of water damage there is. Immediately turn off the phone, immediately take off the case and dry it and shake it out, and then clean it. And then stick it in a container with some sort of drying agent. Rice can work.
Yeah, I've heard rice. Cat, yeah.
Yeah. Cat litter, if you've got a cat. Silica-based cat litter is really good. And just leave it in there for at least 24 to 48 hours and don't attempt to turn it back on before that. Usually, I will say that this has always worked for me. If you get it out quickly and you dry it quickly, it's almost always been okay. It's when I, dropped something that is less well sealed. Like, I did once drop my laptop in the bathtub too. So thankfully it was not plugged in and I wasn't electrocuted. But that didn't survive.
Marcus in Milwaukee is joining us. Hi, Marcus. What would you like to share?
Good morning. So my grandpa used to say to me that you need to know what you need to know before you need to know it. So, for example, knowing how to swim, you definitely need to know how to swim before you fall in the water and you're drowning, And so it's like, I used to teach Taekwondo at Jake Haley, and we used to teach the students to like think in their mind about what if this happens, so that you have that muscle memory, you start to have some training, you start to, think about it. It's why we did tornado drills in school as children.
Oh, Marcus, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think really the books that we've written over the years about survival are really kind of tools for that. Just giving you, even though these situations are pretty unlikely for you to ever really encounter, just sometimes the knowledge that you saw or read or heard what you should do is enough to keep you calm should it happen and allow you to make the right choice. So, it's difficult to memorize everything. I will say that the inspiration for our books came from all the action movies and action TV that we watched as kids more than anything.
Did you watch any MacGyver?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, MacGyver was awesome. What he could do with a paperclip and a stick of chewing gum. No. Yeah, I've always got one with me, a paperclip and a stick of chewing gum. But even just the process of thinking like, what would I do if I had to jump from the plane without the parachute, and watching what James Bond does can be informative, and at least help you feel calm in any situation. It's just that feeling that I can handle it.
Wait, should you travel on a commercial airplane with a parachute?
We don't recommend that. No. I suppose if you're a spy and you're in that kind of situation, you're going to need to. But no, not commercial airplanes.
We are preparing for everything on this Wisconsin weekend. We have David Borgenecht, who is the co-author of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook, Expert Advice for Extreme Situations. Still time to talk. Do you watch survivalist TV shows? Which ones do you follow? What have they taught you? Do you carry items in your purse or backpack that could assist in surviving the unthinkable? Hey, MacGyver is out there. You know who you are. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more Wisconsin Weekend here on the Ideas Network. It is Survival and Laughs here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with David Borgenecht about how to survive the unexpected. He's author and creator of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook series. Surviving every worst case scenario comes down to three steps. Three steps. Be prepared. Don't panic. Have a plan. Do you follow this mantra in your life? 800-642-1234. So, David, let's look at heart attacks here for a moment. Heart attacks on the rise. If you find yourself in a situation where you might be having a heart attack, what should you do?
Excuse me. Sorry. I was not having a heart attack. I was just choking on the water there. if you're having a heart attack, the best course of action is to really notice it and immediately call 911. If you have some baby aspirin, that's obviously going to be helpful. But noticing your own condition and keeping yourself safe and immediately taking whatever action you need to take, even if your knee-jerk reaction might be anti-medical. Often we deny our own pain and feelings, but if you feel something strange in your body, and if you feel like you're having a heart attack, immediately call for help, whether that's somebody else in your house or calling 911. Don't be afraid to look stupid just because it was not that. Better to be safe than sorry.
In automated external defibrillator, an AED, that's used to help someone experiencing sudden cardiac arrest. And you say we can use a defib on ourselves?
I mean, you can, yes. It's not necessarily recommended again, but yeah, if you've got access to it, if no other assistance is around, you can certainly use it on yourself. But obviously you're gonna have to do it before you're officially passed out. So, you know, better to call for help and not experiment it.
All right. Surviving a car crash. If you're driving and about to hit another vehicle or another vehicle is about to hit you, what should you do?
Well, first of all, brake early and keep braking. If you can try to swerve or avoid a collision in a broadside of the car, that's going to be more important. So, you know, for both of you, for both cars that are heading towards each other, if you can't avoid a crash at all, to be honest, the front of the car is going to provide more distance between you and the other vehicle. So you want to really try to avoid a broadside collision and try to steer into the front or the back of the car. And you know, if you can get off the road safely, if you're not on a cliffside, better to do that. Better to move the car off into some sort of open field or forgiving surface, obviously. But again, it's often hard to avoid that impact. Especially if it's at the last minute, and the most important thing you can do is try to slow your car as much as possible. Sit back in your seat, keep your seatbelt fastened, and brace for impact.
Well, we only have less than a minute left here. Wondering, what are some worst case scenarios you're working on now? You've been doing this for more than two decades.
Well, yeah, there's always something new. And actually, I wanted to mention that we are blogging regularly at worstcasescenario.com with all sorts of new scenarios that are a bit more topical. everything from surviving wildfires when those were happening this summer to finding common ground these days and actually literally finding points of connection with somebody that you might not agree with. Is just as much about survival as anything. So please go to worstcasescenario.com and check out not only what we've written, but we have a link there, What's Your Fear, for people to suggest their own worst case scenarios that we may not have done in the books or the blog yet. And if we pick your suggestion, we'll get you a free copy of the book signed and be sure you're on an upcoming newsletter.
Keep the conversations going. David, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Be careful out there. Stay safe.
You too. David Borgnick, the creator and co-author of the Worst Case Scenario Survival Handbook series. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a very good girl.
The Mequon Nature Preserve, north of Milwaukee, is home to Wisconsin's first conservation dog, Tilia. WPR's Mary Kate McCoy recently traveled there to learn how they're harnessing Tilia's powerful sense of smell to reach their conservation goals.
That sniffing you hear is Tilia, the conservation dog at Mequon Nature Preserve. Right now, she's looking for a treat. But when she's on the job, she'll be sniffing out wild parsnip or salamanders.
There you go. Good girl.
What exactly is a conservation dog, you might ask? Tilia's main job is to detect both invasive and endangered species at the nature preserve. The staff then comes in and removes those invasive species, like the wild parsnip, and monitors for the endangered ones, like the salamanders. Corey Gritzmacher is the director of operations at the nature preserve. He says Tilia's far better at it than even the highest trained human professionals. Canines can be up to 40 times more efficient than people.
Sometimes the best trained volunteers or staff in the world won't even be able to find what, you know, a canine can. So that's the pretty impressive part about it. And who doesn't want to go to work with a dog?
Just who's in charge is up for debate.
I often joke, you know, it's not necessarily us getting trained. It's kind of them training us. You know, like, this is what you have to do if you want me to do something for you. Right? Yeah. Yes. You always have a lot to say.
Tilia is highly motivated by food or by toys. Gritzmacher says being motivated is the key to being a good conservation dog.
Dogs in general already have 200 million olfactory sensors. We have about 5 million. So they're already set up and designed for scent detection. It's really just finding a dog that's motivated and wants to do it on a regular basis and is excited to do it, right?
4 years old now, Tilia began training as a puppy. It was slow at the start, with treats hidden in cardboard boxes. Then it got progressively more challenging until she graduated to what Gritzmacher calls pairing. That's when he places scent samples in a salt shaker. They're much more appealing with a treat sitting on top.
Eventually we'd start taking the treat away, and then if she continues to hit on the correct sample, then she gets rewarded. So she's going to get paid again. You know, it's kind of the same thing. You know, we do our work, we get paid. She does her work, she gets paid.
The day I visited, Tilia's excitement was clear. With her vest on, she knew what was happening. Gritzmacher had hidden treats to mimic a search on the prairie for parsnip or salamanders.
She's got a release word. That's kind of her cue to go, we're going to go search and find something. So, and you're pretty excited to do this today, aren't you? So you got to go back down to sit. Good girl. All right. Twinkie. It's kind of a little bit of a mind game and an obstacle course for her to work through.
While Tilia's nose is the star, when it comes down to it, the success of the endeavor is as much about the rapport and relationship between the dog and the trainer. If Gritzmacher hadn't trained Tilia, he wouldn't be able to pick up on her subtle body cues, like if she gets distracted by a deer or rabbit and veers off course.
And this is the part where you start training me, right? Yeah, yeah.
Using dogs for conservation work is the same idea as police or search and rescue dogs. While Tilia was the only conservation dog in the state for several years, she now has company, and Gritzmacher only expects that number to grow.
Canines are going to start to play a huge role in the conservation field just because of their amazing detection skills, especially when resources are limited, staff is limited, and you have to search, you know, potentially thousands of acres or miles of shoreline or whatever.
It's tough work for her. Gritzmacher says she gets worn out from a long day at work just like we do. Tilia's owner is the director of the Mequon Nature Preserve. At the end of the day, she gets to go home, be the family dog, and take some well-deserved time off.
Do you agree? Okay, good.
WPR's Mary-Kate McCoy brought us that story on Tilia, the conservation dog. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. What's your idea for Wisconsin Weekend conversations? Send your suggestions for Wisconsin Weekend to ideas@wpr.org and we'll explore your tip. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.